Nobody's seen her, nobody heard from her. She's really missing.
Chelsea was out to scare up some Halloween fun.
She had a poison ivy costume, bright lipstick, a wig on.
She looked beautiful in her costume.
But next morning, she was gone.
I got a couple of Facebook messages. You see Chelsea, you know where Chelsea's at.
The vehicle that you put her in was gone in the cartoon.
You had the majority of people in costumes, disguised. The worst case scenario to start an investigation.
Was somebody lying?
Did you take that girl and do harm to her?
No. Did you have anything to do with her disappearing at all? Or
no.
A Halloween mystery that will leave you chilled to the bone.
Very eerie place. The trains going by, the echoes.
What did you think when you saw that?
The hair on the back of your neck kind of stands up.
I had to find her.
In a quiet rural township in southeastern Michigan, as October chilled into autumn, two young women prepared for the social event of the season.
It's going to be great. There's going to be so many people.
Or so they imagined. So they hoped. In their sunny naivete, they and so many others of a particular demographic on the farms and in the small towns around Monroe County.
It was like a buildup that whole summer that we couldn't wait to go to this Halloween party.
Halloween. Becky Brinson and her friend Chelsea Bruck just loved dressing up for Halloween. Chelsea and Becky worked together at a restaurant called Olga's Kitchen in Monroe. And as they served their customers, they talked endlessly about what was coming. This wasn't going to be just any Halloween party. It was Big Mike's annual Halloween Bash of 2014.
Everyone knew Big Mike has the biggest Halloween party.
And after all, their friends were going, and there'd be bands and noise and excitement, and who knew what all there'd be?
We're definitely going to be there.
Big Mike had made quite a name for himself with his heavy metal music and his epic parties here at his mother's farm. The girls had been to some of those parties before, and nothing bad ever happened, so really, why should they worry as they dreamt up their costumes, their clever impersonations of evil?
We're both going to be Batman villains.
Chelsea would be the essence of evil, Batman's nemesis, Poison Ivy.
She looked beautiful in her costume.
Yeah, I bet.
I'll never forget.
Chelsea made it herself, spent weeks bent over a needle and thread, and by hand sewed on each leaf of artificial ivy.
I didn't even know she could do that.
And she found a wig, just the right thing, maroon, with tips of red, like blood, like the wine jug she carried. Like the bright red of her poison lips.
She must have been very proud of it.
She was.
Did they imagine, even for a moment, as they prepared, that true evil would find them here on this sleepy country road, not just the pretend kind? No, not as they tingled with excitement that Saturday, October 25th, 2014, and blended into the wild bacchanalian scene inside two giant tents Big Mike had set up for the occasion. And the revelers poured in. 600, 700 people, hundreds more maybe, who knew? A parade of eight heavy metal rock bands blasted their shockwaves into the night. One of them, Big Mike's very own band, Pickaxe Preacher. That's him, singing. The band had dressed up as Ninja Turtles for Halloween. And somewhere out there in that crowd were Becky and Chelsea and their friend Penny Watkins.
Me and Chelsea kind of attached at the hip.
Penny was a decade older than Chelsea, had four growing kids. But that night at the party,
we're walking around and being goofy, like two little school girls, just laughing and giggling and drinking a little bit. I felt 21 again when I was hanging out with her.
Chelsea was 22, grew up in a tiny, safe place called Maybe. She was the youngest of five children, still lived at home with her parents.
She was nice, she was friendly, kind of wholesome, just this girl that, you know, came from the country and was ready to meet new people and do new things and have some fun. happy, happy to start her life, happy to adventure and explore and do new experiences.
Just after midnight, the last band stopped playing, and Big Mike lit up a huge bonfire, flames up to 15, 20 feet high.
We actually walked over there together. That's when she bumped her nose.
Chelsea, that is, bumped her nose on a tent pole. Had to hurt.
Was it bleeding or anything?
It wasn't bleeding. There was a mark where she had hit it, and she was holding her face. We were kind of laughing at her because, you know, she's clumsy sometimes.
It hurt. You know, when you hit your nose, it kind of stings.
Sure.
You know, I kind of babied her a little bit, like, oh, you're going to be okay. She wanted to go home right then. I'm like, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Just drink a little bit. It'll go away, you know. And after a minute or two, she was fine, and she was back enjoying the party.
Then, about 1 a.m., it was time to go home. Earlier, Chelsea had asked Penny for a ride home. But sometime during the bonfire, they lost sight of each other. And Penny's sister had to work the next morning and so had to leave right then.
She had to be up at 6, so it was time to go.
Such confusion. By then, Becky was holding Chelsea's phone because Chelsea had no pockets in her poison ivy getup. But Becky couldn't find Chelsea either.
And I was like, what do I do? Like, do I find a different ride? Do I get stuck here? Like, go find Chelsea?
I assumed that, you know, she knew other people and someone would give her a ride home. I felt like she was there with people in the community, people that knew her. So I didn't have a reason to be concerned that anything bad would happen.
So they left, Penny and Becky, who still had Chelsea's phone.
Probably the biggest regret of my life.
In hindsight, it's probably like the worst mistake I've ever made was not looking out for her better than I did. There was so much I could have done to help protect her, and I didn't.
Later, much later, someone would report seeing Chelsea as the party wound down, in the dark, alone, seemed to be crying. And then, nothing. Chelsea Bruck simply vanished into the cold night air. Where was Chelsea? Certainly she'd turn up by the next day.
At the time, I guess, there was a hope that maybe something silly happened.
But that hope faded fast.
There was probably about 15 people here. They're all searching through the field. And that's when it started getting more alarming.
This is real.
Yeah.
The day after Big Mike's Halloween party 2014 was a Sunday, recovery day.
I remember just telling my dad how much fun it was and how happy I was to get out of the house and, you know, just all good things.
Penny Watkins and Becky Brinson failed to understand just yet it was going to be second-guessing day, too. Becky, through the haze in her morning after head, called Chelsea's mom, left a message that she had Chelsea's cell phone.
And whenever Chelsea woke up that day, she could come get it because I'd be home all day.
Did you hear anything back?
I didn't hear anything until late that night.
When Chelsea's sister sent Becky a message on Facebook saying Chelsea hadn't come home, so Becky responded.
She's probably at a friend's house. She's probably, you know, maybe still sleeping. Who knows? Maybe got up, ate, went back to bed. You know, who knows?
Who indeed? By Monday, when Chelsea had still not turned up at home, or called, or sent word, her worried family contacted whoever they could think of. Friends, the police, then, Big Mike.
I'll sit at breakfast.
This is Big Mike, the party guy. His real name is Mike Williams, and this is his mother's farm, where he's lived pretty much all his life.
I got a couple of Facebook messages. You see Chelsea, you know where Chelsea's at? And I'm like, I didn't know even know who they were talking about at first.
It was Chelsea's sister who messaged Big Mike. The family was worried, very worried now.
People were like messaging me, Mike, go look through your field, you know, go look, take a walk, you know. I'm like, all right.
But look for what? A body? Surely not. Anyway, look he did.
I took my dog with me. We went walking. I went hiking through the field, probably hiked a couple miles, and then my dog stumbled on a fox trap.
So Mike took his injured and bleeding dog back to his house, and there encountered Chelsea's mom, who he said gave him a chilly reception. He excused himself, took his dog to the vet.
And then I came back here. There were probably about 15 people here. They're all searching through the field. That's when it started getting more alarming.
This is real.
Yeah, this is real. She's missing.
Chelsea's family was frantic, did not waste time.
They set up camp here.
Yeah, they did. They kind of like, this was like their base for a little bit.
Did they actually put up a tent or something?
Put up a tent. I had a generator, porta potty. And I talked to my attorney and how we should handle it. And he said, just leave them alone for now. And uh-huh. Eventually they'll go away. And we took that advice and we just kind of let them do their thing. And
did they say, do you mind if we set up here?
I don't think they even asked. I think
really?
They just did. Yeah.
Because they sort of suspected you.
Yeah, they kind of suspected me, and I don't think they really, maybe they were trying to put heat on me or something.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Meanwhile, a few sheriff's deputies joined the family and searched the fields behind Mike's house with their ATVs and a search dog, and found nothing. But suspicion was in the air. That Monday evening, at least as Mike saw it, Chelsea's mom, understandably very worried, took on an accusing tone.
Is she in your basement? Is she in your trailer? Do you have her? Like, I have her locked up somewhere. That kind of like threw me out. Like, no, I don't, I'm out here helping.
But here around the farm, people wondered, was he? Anyway, that was about the time Penny heard that Chelsea never made it home after the party.
Kind of got a lump in my throat. Like, what?
And she joined the search that night.
At the time, I guess there was a hope that maybe something silly happened. Like she got her leg caught in somewhere, or she was just somehow was on the property and
got lost, was in the woods somewhere or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's Monroe. Stuff like that don't happen in Monroe.
It's a safe, safe little place.
Yeah.
The next thing Becky heard was very early the next morning, Tuesday.
I got a knock on my door from the police.
And then finally Becky understood. Something awful may have happened to her friend Chelsea.
What did your mind go to?
The worst possible scenarios. Maybe she walked home. What if she got hit by a car? What if she's in a ditch somewhere? What if somebody kidnapped her? Or trafficking.
There were cases of human trafficking?
Yeah.
So people were being snatched, young women particularly, and then taken off to become prostitutes somewhere against their will. How did that feel?
I was helpless.
Penny used Facebook to get the word out about Chelsea and kept looking.
I was out there almost every day. Some nights I'd put the kids to bed and go out searching all night.
Out on Big Mike's property, the family invited the media, including our Detroit affiliate WDIV, to their command post. And Chelsea's mother tried to stay focused through her fear and regret.
Had I known she was going to a party with over 600 people, 22 or not, she would not have been going.
This was agony for a mother and for a sister.
If she was able to come home, she would have by now.
From Mike's farm, the family sent volunteer search parties around the neighborhood and beyond.
And they were still conducting searches throughout the fields. They were knocking on farmers' doors, asking if they could look around their fields and things like that.
Detectives from the sheriff's office were very active too by then. But they'd already encountered a serious problem. How to investigate 600 or 800 people, many in Halloween disguise. An eyewitness.
He saw Chelsea. He described her as being tipsy.
He also spotted someone walking away with her.
He described this guy pretty good, which ultimately led us to this composite sketch.
Upon releasing it, we got flooded with phone calls.
Each day that first week, little groups of people showed up at Big Mike's place out in rural Monroe County, eager to follow a worried sister's direction.
5 mile radius out the first circle, my house 10 miles out. That's where we're looking, that's where she'd go.
Well, in town, the sheriff's office confronted a baffling mystery.
It's a Halloween party, so you had the majority of people in costumes.
It didn't take but a minute for Detectives Brian Sroka and Mike Predmore to get the picture. This wasn't going to be easy.
Somehow, they had to figure out what happened to one young woman at a rowdy party of more than 600 people who had been drinking, many of whom had disguised themselves for Halloween.
So you put all those together, it almost makes it a worst-case scenario to start an investigation.
There certainly wasn't a list of people they could contact.
You're in the middle of nowhere. It's pitch black, you know, minus the fire and the little bit of moonlight. And this party's going all throughout the early morning hours. People are coming and going. There's just no accountability. Who's there? Who's coming?
Sure.
Who's leaving?
So somebody walking through the grounds of the party, if they weren't right beside the fire, it'd be a little hard to tell who they were. I mean, it's like some ghostly presence coming out of the dark.
Yes.
And then they're wearing makeup and then they're gone.
Yes.
So it was just chaos almost.
Still, they needed to figure out what happened. Also, they wanted to understand the young woman who was missing.
Chelsea, she almost became our sister during this. We talked to the family. I mean, we've searched her room. I mean, we know almost everything about her, it seems like. You know, she's 22 years old. She's the youngest of five children, almost a baby of the family. She was the only one still living at home with mom and dad, and they kind of were lenient on her, but she wasn't going to
something very special about that youngest daughter.
Yes.
You've got a large family.
Yes.
So her place in the family was sort of family sweetheart, that kind of thing?
Pretty much.
And we started to establish this, you know, her personal history of she has nowhere to really go. She doesn't drive. She wouldn't just up and leave.
Which is just what Chelsea's sister told our Toledo affiliate, WNWO.
She even had told my mom that night, I'm not even staying that long. I'll be home in a couple hours. She was just going to go with her friends for a little bit and come back.
Detectives talked to Chelsea's friends, too, of course.
And what did they tell you about her dating history?
She wasn't currently seeing anybody, but there were a couple guys she was interested in. So we looked into those people.
These were guys she had dated before?
She had dated or was interested in.
How carefully did you look at these guys she had been interested in or had dated?
Very, very in depth.
Did any of them go to the party?
No.
Oh.
So we were trying to determine, did they pick her up? Did they have someone pick her up? What did they know about Chelsea that night? Mm-hmm. We brought them in, we talked to them, we searched their homes, we searched their cell phones. At one point we even collected some of their clothing, you know, to maybe possibly get some type of evidence, DNA, fibers.
But detectives were hearing from people who had been at the party.
We actually have six different people that we made contact with who let Chelsea borrow their phone for phone calls. And then she actually tried to call two friends.
One of those friends was Penny, who was home by the time Chelsea called.
She asked if I could come get her. At the time, I thought I was being responsible, and I told her, I'm sorry, I drunk too much. I really have no business driving. She didn't sound desperate for a ride. She didn't sound upset.
She never tried to call her mom or anybody else. She was seen crying a few times, you know, by the fire. She was saying nobody's, you know, she has no friends to give her a ride. She was cold. She was just upset.
But then, a couple of days after the party, a woman called in, said her son may have seen something important.
He saw Chelsea, and he remembers clearly that it was Chelsea because he talked to her about her poison ivy costume and that how badly allergic he is to poison ivy.
Did you remember what time this was?
It was approximately 3:30 in the morning. He described her as being tipsy.
But here's the thing, and maybe it was some kind of break in the case. He said he saw a man hovering over Chelsea.
He's kind of comforting her, standing with her, you know, talking to her.
Almost like they knew each other, said the witness.
He described him, you know, as a little taller, slender, hair swooping, wearing glasses.
And then the two disappeared into the dark, he said.
He described this guy pretty good to one of our a Michigan State Police sketch artist, which ultimately led us to this composite sketch.
And released it to the public?
Right away, as soon as we had it.
Upon releasing it, we got flooded with phone calls. We didn't realize how common of a look that actually is. I mean, a lot of people actually look like the sketch.
Mike Williams offered an opinion.
It looks like 150 different people that I know. I don't know. I can take you to a bar right now where everybody in the bar looks like that.
But Mike told the detectives that a couple of members of a Milwaukee band that worked the party looked a bit like the sketch.
Maybe talk to them. I don't know. Maybe she hopped in their tour van and went back to Milwaukee. I don't know. She was kind of a free spirit. So, I mean, I thought maybe she just cut town, yeah. You know.
So we sought assistance from the FBI, tracking them down. Nothing panned out.
They all had alibi.
Yes.
But Big Mike? Neither the detectives nor Chelsea's family could shake the idea. This guy was hiding something.
We asked for his consent to search the house, and he denied his consent.
Big Mike in the spotlight. And a new witness who says he saw Chelsea right before she went missing from Mike's party.
So you went back out to the parking lot, and the vehicle that you put her in was gone, and her too.
Days after Chelsea Bruck disappeared, the detectives decided it was time for a serious talk with Big Mike Williams.
Chelsea, okay, you know her. I don't know her, but I do know who she is.
Funny thing about Mike, on the one hand, he seemed cooperative, but on the other?
We asked for his consent to search the house, you know, for any kind of evidence from the investigation, make sure Chelsea wasn't even in the house, and he denied his consent.
So, they did it the hard way.
They came in with 13 SWAT guys in full gear. And I said, do you have a search warrant? And they presented it to me right there and then. And then, are you let us in or we got kicking the door? That's when I let them in.
They're getting tough with you at this point.
Yeah, you know, when they went through my house and they were searching for things, like, they left a terrible mess. It's the first time I think ever in my entire life living here for, you know, I didn't feel comfortable in my own home.
Outside, investigators took one look at Mike's fire pit and was there something in there?
They dug through, you know, years of burning stuff, you know, having parties. And
who was that like?
I kind of shook my head. They had it all taped off, and I think they dug all day looking in there.
Nothing. Still, was he a person of significant interest? Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
We kept Mike, Big Mike, close.
But the investigation was about to take a turn. Detective Predmore was at the office when a new tip came in. About a young man named Harlan Byrd.
Did he possibly have information that would help us find Chelsea or what happened to her?
Which is how the 19-year-old Mr. Byrd wound up in an interview room at the sheriff's office.
So who'd you go to this party with?
I went with my best friend. I consider my brother.
He remembers two subjects harassing a female in the parking lot of the party. And at this time, they were, you know, shoving her around and pushing her around, assaulting this female, and that she was out crying and yelling for help. He intervened, and he fought these guys off, and he helped Chelsea up off the ground. And he actually got blood of Chelsea's on his shirt.
Could he describe her?
He described her as Chelsea.
Okay.
He described her as
poison ivy,
the wig. He described Chelsea to a T.
Finally, a witness who could actually tell them something.
I just told her to please sit still. I didn't want to leave her, but I didn't want to stay there either because I didn't know whether or not it was something found like that. They'd blame me.
Harlan said he put the woman in a red four-door car, though he didn't know who the car belonged to. And then he went back to the party to find anyone who knew her.
I was looking for about 5 to 15 minutes, walked back to the car, and her was gone.
So you went back out to the parking lot, and the vehicle that you put her in was gone,
and her too.
The detectives knew Chelsea bumped her nose at the party, so when Harlan mentioned blood, that got their attention.
So from where you picked her up, there was a little bit of blood on your right shoulder?
Not this shirt I was wearing, it's a different shirt, but yes. It was. I'm not seeing a big spot, it was like a little dab, and I didn't realize it until I got home, then I looked at my shirt.
You still got the shirt?
I should, and I'm pretty sure it's getting cleaned right now because my fiancé has a girlfriend, so that's fiancé that we're kind of...
If there's blood on it, we want it for her DNA.
If it was clean, would you still be able to get something off of it, or no?
Unfortunate, if true. But there was something about young Harlan that didn't seem quite on the level.
And when you got her up, she had a bloody nose?
I didn't see her having a bloody nose, but I figured that she was bleeding somewhere because I was a...
Oh, really? You told me she had a bloody nose.
I didn't say I seen it. I said...
I even asked. You said it was up here.
I said it had to be because where she rested her shoulder on, or her face on my shoulder. That's what I figured because that's...
Then when I asked you how much blood there was, you said, oh, just a few spots. And I said, from her nose, you said, I don't know, it's just a few spots.
I don't know for sure.
I mean, I'm having a little bit of problems with your story here, Harlan.
I'm just telling you what this girl that I had found.
When a person tells a story like that, frequently it's cover for having actually done something bad.
Correct. Correct.
You start thinking he says that he has her blood on his clothing.
But I tried to save her.
Is he trying to make an excuse if something did happen to Chelsea, if we find her with some injuries, is he trying to account for that and cover that up?
Yeah. Hey, are you in here for another reason? You know, did something happen and...
You're
coming forward, but you don't want to come forward and just be direct. This is your way of telling us that you possibly had something to do with Chelsea's disappearance. And he denied, you know, doing anything to Chelsea.
They put some pressure on Harlan.
Did you take that girl and do harm to her?
No.
Did you take that girl and have sex with her?
No.
Did you rape her?
No.
Did you kill her?
No.
And it was through more questioning, his story kind of got, you know, it wasn't making sense at all. And that's when, you know, ultimately we ask him, did you ever see her? Do you even know Chelsea? Did you have any contact with her? He ultimately said, no, I just wanted to look good.
He made the whole thing up?
He made the whole thing up.
This is nothing but a big lie that I shouldn't have done, and I'm sorry.
Of course, they had to waste more time checking Harlan's stories, whether made up or not.
Come on.
And then they arrested him for lying to the police.
What's it like to think you've got a lead like that and then it's gone?
It's deflating.
Still, something about that young man. As they moved on, they kept him in mind, just in case. One tip that sounds too good to be true.
He had a knife, and he goes, this is what I used with Chelsea Brook.
And another tip that's all too real.
She says, oh my God, Brian, that's her shoe.
Chelsea Brock had been missing for more than a week.
I love her, and I miss her, and I want her to come home.
When her family and friends gathered for a prayer vigil.
She's coming home. It's not a hope. It's a reality.
It's something that I wish no one else ever has to go through. She's your baby sister. You're supposed to take care of her and be there for her, and you can't.
Chelsea's family moved their search operation from Big Mike's place to a more permanent base.
They actually went to a vacant bank from Real Bank and Trust, set up a headquarters. A
lot of new faces today, which is good because people are tired.
And from here, her family held for dear life to a fading hope that Chelsea was alive, might still come home.
Absolutely miss you, love you. If somebody is holding you, no matter where you're at, we just want you home.
The family's organization was impressive. Each volunteer assigned to a group, each group sent to a particular area or neighborhood.
And this just went on and on.
Soon there were posters of Chelsea's face and purple ribbons, her favorite color, everywhere. Friends like Penny worried she might have been kidnapped by sex traffickers. So Penny went looking in the darker corners of Toledo, Ohio, a half hour south of Monroe.
I was handing out flyers. Have you seen this girl? You know, in the areas where prostitution is known and all that stuff. I had policemen tell me, you don't need to be out here. You need to go back home. Because I would go out at night because that's when the prostitutes were out.
Kind of a dangerous thing to do, you know.
I had to find her. I just, you know, what do you do? I mean, I couldn't live with myself just sitting at home and hoping that she'd turn up.
Chelsea was featured on Dateline's own Missing in America series. Her mother tried to stay positive.
Cannot lose hope. Cannot give up. The faith and prayers gives us that hope. If anything, it's only gotten stronger.
But Penny and others couldn't quite keep that up.
I know her sweet mom always had hope. And I know one time I introduced myself and I said I was Chelsea's friend, and she corrected me. No, you are Chelsea's friend. Chelsea's out there.
But Christmas 2014 came and went. No sign of Chelsea. And then, a week into the new year, a break. Maybe the break they'd been waiting for. A terrified woman in Toledo reported that her ex-boyfriend confessed to her that he killed Chelsea.
Okay, Carrie, I'm Detective Premore. This is Detective Smith.
We brought her in right away. And another detective and I sat down with her and interviewed her.
Her name was Carrie Carr.
When I went to go leave, I walked out and I was trying to get in my car. Okay. He pulled out a knife. Okay, a pocket knife.
Okay.
And then he goes, this is the one I use on Chelsea.
She provided information that this ex-boyfriend of hers told her that, you know, he was at the party and that he left with Chelsea and that he ultimately ended up killing Chelsea and dumping her body in the Toledo area in a cemetery.
And Carrie said he threatened to kill her, too.
He, like, grabbed me by my shirt, and he had a knife, and he goes, this is what I used with Chelsea Brooke. He didn't say her name exactly.
What did he say?
He said, this is what I used on Chelsea.
Okay.
Don't make me use it on you.
You could tell that she was nervous, real on edge.
Carrie said she lived in fear of her ex-boyfriend, and she wanted him arrested right away.
I want him locked up, but I can't have him, questioned and then released. He lives on the same street as me.
Right.
He's going to come after me and my kid.
If Carrie was telling the truth, this was very big.
Did you actually confront this guy?
We did. We interviewed him, and we brought up the same information that was provided to us without even mentioning her name. He says, this girlfriend of mine, Carrie Carr, we've had problems for a long time, and I believe that she's doing this to get back at me because she don't like me. She wants to see me in trouble.
The detectives brought Carrie in for another chat.
After a lengthy discussion, she ultimately said yes. What her ex-boyfriend told us, that she was trying to get back at him and try to get him in trouble, almost like I got you kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, frustrating work that you do.
Yeah, this took days. Mm-hmm. You know, it took us away from what we're thinking we're investigating, trying to locate Chelsea and find out what happened to her with this information that someone comes in and brings to us.
So they arrested Carrie, too, for lying to the police. And they went back to square one while Chelsea's family waited for something, anything good.
Still very hopeful that she is somewhere alive and well.
And the searchers slogged.
It's pretty marshy back there. It's a lot of mud. It's pretty tough to get through, a lot of down timber, so it's challenging.
Cops, deputies, volunteer firefighters.
Any type of clues, maybe some things that she might have been wearing or any type of disturbed ground or something like that.
And everybody waited for something from the detectives.
A lot of pressure.
Oh, intense pressure.
We did work on it every single day. All of our resources were still on this case. New leads coming in, you were just going to be busy, and you just kept chipping away at it.
And then it was a Sunday in late March, spring cleaning time, and a woman called in. She'd found something on the edge of her property.
How far away from the party was this?
That was 2.3 miles, so that is a route that many people leaving the party would have taken.
Her name was Cheryl Retzloff. This is her. She told the detective she'd been cleaning up a winter's worth of debris along the country road, just like every other spring.
What sort of stuff do you find out here? Because there are cars going by here all the time.
Oh, yeah. I find all manner of things. I mean, I have found cameras hanging from my trees with, the discards in them. We've found car radios and speakers and cases of booze and broken booze bottles.
She followed her usual route along the tree line.
Where were you that particular day?
Here. I start usually here. and make my way all the way around and then end up back here.
And that's where it was. A shoe.
What kind of shoe was it?
It was leather, flat,
okay.
Red, like a Mary Jane type of shoe.
Okay.
Cheryl threw it in the trash bag, moved on.
So my husband comes home from work, and as per the usual, he's like, so what'd you find this year? And I'm like, well, I didn't really find anything but trash other than this shoe. And he was instantly on alert. A shoe.
It was?
He's like, you know, Cheryl, really? Maybe, do you think it could be hers? And I knew who he meant right away. Right away. And I'm like, no, there's no way. All winter, they searched everywhere here. How could they have missed it? How could they have missed it?
Cheryl called the Monroe County Sheriff's Office, and deputies came to pick up the shoe. And the next day, Detective Stroker sent a photo of the shoe to Chelsea's mom.
I'm on the phone with her. I tell her, I just sent the email to you. Did you get it? She opens it up and she says, oh my God, Brian, that's her shoe. And it was just surreal. At that point, your heart drops and you're like, this may really be, you know, something we've been waiting for. And she checks with other family members and they also confirm that it was Chelsea's shoe.
Now that was a tip.
Yes.
The shoe was tip number 623.
But what does it tell you, really?
Yeah, it didn't look good. Again, she's still missing. We have one shoe. You know, where's the other shoe at? Where's Chelsea at? Where's her costume? Where's everything else at? So.
And nothing else found in that area?
Nothing else. We searched within several miles on foot and in the air, in fields, woods, and not a single sign of anything else.
And then a certain young man ran out of money. Fascinating what a person will do when he has to.
It looked kind of like a plant, like a fake plant.
Chelsea's costume and a strange coincidence.
What did you think when you saw that?
The hair on the back of your neck kind of stands up.
It was 5 months after Chelsea disappeared. And the only trace of her was one red shoe on a roadside 2 miles from the Halloween party. But when Chelsea's mom found out about that shoe...
I could tell a change in her demeanor because she had been real upbeat during the whole investigation. You could just feel a negativity. She knew at that point, I think.
The air coming out.
Yeah.
Spring. People go outside. They see things.
Was this here before? Was this here when you came that day? This berm, this earthen thing you climb
over?
Yeah.
It wasn't as big to my knowledge, but
yeah. It
was definitely there.
Eric Kassab and a friend were trying to make some quick cash, finding and selling abandoned bits of metal. This was 10 miles from Big Mike's.
That day I was coming here to find any scrap metal that I could take out. I was in a rock and a hard place, and I needed money pretty quickly. And
what do they call that, scrapping or something?
Yeah, it was scrapping.
Eric wasn't having much luck. And then, inside this half-collapsed ruin, he turned over a piece of disintegrating plywood and...
I saw what I thought was like, it looked kind of like a plant, like a fake plant, so I went and picked it up. I didn't realize what it was because it was all bunched up.
Uh-huh.
And it had leaves on it, like fake leaves.
Sewn on?
Yeah.
There was also a maroon wig.
But I did see the wig. It kind of creeped me out, so I didn't want to pick it up at all.
So what did you and your friend do at that point?
I showed him. He told me it was a Poison Ivy costume. We actually contemplated keeping it because it looked cool.
Yeah.
And decided that it wasn't worth our time. Threw it back down right where it was underneath the plywood and then continued to look for scrap metal.
The two left with what little metal they could salvage and forgot all about it. Until...
About a week later, I was at work. I saw a poster for the missing girl wearing that costume.
Oh, and immediately you thought...
Hey, that looks just like what I found.
So, should he report it? Well, he probably should, he knew. But after all, he touched that costume. Couldn't that make him look kind of suspicious?
I've seen enough television shows to know what DNA is.
Yep.
And I was around the same age as the girl. There were just so many circumstances that could make me look like a suspect.
Sure.
I contemplated it. I didn't want to turn it in. I just wanted to leave it alone and pretend like it didn't exist. But I couldn't get it out of my head.
Eric joined his sister for Easter brunch and told his sister about the costume and his dilemma. She knew right away what Eric had to do. Had to.
She was telling me that, like, I had to report it. And she basically gave me an ultimatum. She calls the police or I call the police.
So he made the call.
I was actually sitting down for Easter dinner, and then the phone rings, and our sergeant called, and he said, I mean, you need to come in. We have Chelsea's costume and wig. And I'm thinking, are you sure? You know, are you sure this is hers? He texted me a photograph of it, and you get that feeling in your heart and stomach, and you're like, wow, this is what we've been looking for a long time.
The costume had been ripped of the straps and the crotch. Important? Maybe. They sent it to the state lab for tests. And officers picked through the discarded junk, on foot, by air, all day, and into the evening. And right away that Easter Sunday, the detectives brought Eric Kassab to the station for a talk.
Suspicious that he just happens to find this costume. He waited a week to call, so there's a lot of things that are looking kind of suspicious.
Just as Eric had feared.
Did you go to that party by chance?
No.
Tons of people went to this, so we're trying not
to. No,
like,
I've never gone to a party.
You're saying you didn't go to the party then on Post Road in Newport that day at all? Or
no. However, at the time, my baby's mother lived in Newport.
Okay.
In fact, his ex-girlfriend lived on War Road, the same road where Chelsea's shoe was found.
You said you don't know Chelsea?
I don't know her.
Okay. I gotta ask you.
Yeah, I know.
Did you have anything to do with her disappearing
no.
at all? Or
no.
Eric swore he was at home with his daughter that weekend, had nothing to do with Chelsea's disappearance. He agreed to give his DNA and fingerprints.
All right, I'm just opening your mouth. I'm gonna swab the inside here.
But there was something else about the discovery of the poison ivy costume, and it had to do with Harlan Byrd. Remember him? The guy who tried to sound like a hero, who told detectives he helped Chelsea at the party, then admitted his story was a lie?
This abandoned building where the costume and wig were found was literally 100 yards, 200 yards tops from Harlan Byrd's house. You could pretty much see Harlan Byrd's residence from where the costume was found.
Harlan lived with his grandmother in a trailer park directly across the road from the abandoned building.
What did you think when you saw that?
The hair on the back of your neck kind of stands up.
Coincidence? The detectives didn't think so.
First thing we did, called Harlan Byrd in for another interview.
Yeah, I think finally we got our guy here.
Yes.
Because you'd been kind of wonky about him before, right?
Yes. Yeah. Things looked like they were adding up that we might finally have something on Harlan.
Harlan came back to the station, this time with an attorney.
How do we explain that those items were found that close to your grandma's house?
I can't explain it.
I mean, you recognize how bad that looks.
I understand how bad it looks, but it has nothing to do with me.
Harlan admitted he'd been to the abandoned building where the costume was found.
Do you have any thoughts as to why some of her clothing would be found?
None.
A tenth of a mile from your grandma's place?
None. Unless someone is over there trying to frame me.
Harlan was adamant. He never saw Chelsea at the party. He made up the story. He had nothing to do with her disappearance.
He did appear to be nervous, like, you know, this is getting serious now. I really made everything up. I really have no involvement. I'll do whatever you want.
Would you be willing to take a polygraph?
A lie detector test?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Harlan took the test and passed.
No. Are they accurate? Are they not? Can somebody deceive them? Mm-hmm. But we also obtained a DNA sample from Harlan Byrd because we did recover the leotard and wig, and we had a pretty good feeling there was going to be some kind of DNA on there. So he did give us a DNA sample.
So they sent it off to the lab and waited. Penny heard the news and, still distressed by a sense of failed responsibility, felt some force pulling her to the place the poison ivy costume was found.
Very eerie place. There is a train track just on the other side of it. And I don't know, I just envisioned being tortured in there and the trains going by and the clinking and the echoes. But I just had to see for myself, I suppose. Maybe I'd find something that someone else missed. I don't know.
Or maybe someone else would. It was spring, remember. Time to get outside, clear the land, find things.
I found a dead body on my property.
Has Chelsea finally been found?
I think it's that girl who's posted all over town.
I'm Priya Mann live in Carlton, where we have breaking developments in the search for Chelsea Brock. Take a look behind me. Just hours ago, a body was discovered about a quarter mile away from where...
April 24, 2015, about 7 miles from Big Mike's place, a dump truck pulled up to a construction site. A man was building his dream house, needed fill for a low spot on his property. But as the driver backed up across the spring wet soil...
This truck gets stuck in the mud. He goes behind the truck, walks behind there to assess the situation, see if we can get it moving again.
And that's when he saw it. A few minutes later, the property owner called 911, very upset.
I found a dead body on my property.
Can you tell if it's a male or female?
Female. I think it's that girl who's posted all over town.
He was guessing because the face was unrecognizable, but was it Chelsea? Had the truck dumped its load of dirt? Had it not gotten stuck, they'd never have had a chance to find out. The body would have been buried forever. Instead...
We all responded out there. We had the crime lab from the Michigan State Police come out there and help us out, too. We took a close look at the body and...
Had it been covered up or anything like that?
The body had some small logs, branches over parts of the body.
As if somebody tried to hide it?
Yes.
Not far from the body... They found one artificial leaf, just like the rest of the leaves on Chelsea's poison ivy costume.
Kind of tells you something, doesn't it?
Yes.
So that's a hard call. You don't have absolute confirmation that it's her, but you know it is.
We had a pretty good idea.
Did you call her family then, or did you wait?
We went out and told the family. We wanted them to know before they heard it, because the media was showing up and we knew the news was going to be all over it. We didn't want the Brooke family to hear it that way. So we went out and personally visited them and said, you know, we found the body. We don't know for sure it's Chelsea, but it's a female. We think it might be. You know, for it to come down to that, it was extra tough to go out there and be the bearer of such bad news.
Becky wasn't family, of course, but it hit her pretty hard just the same.
One of the ladies at work said they found a body. I went home, turned on the news, and sure enough, they were by the railroad tracks, and they had the helicopters, and...
What was happening in your tummy?
sick. Sick, my heart was pounding, butterflies, and by this point, we just wanted to know the truth. And still we had to wait for them to verify that it was her.
They did that the next day. Dental records.
It was a relief to know the truth, but then opened a whole new door of questions of what happened, why, who did this. So it was like a whole new stressor.
We almost felt more pressure on us all of a sudden, too, because it's not a missing person case anymore. It's a homicide. We know there's a killer out there. Is the killer going to strike again? We need to find that person as fast as we can.
And that's about when the state lab called with DNA results from Chelsea's costume. They found her DNA, of course. In fact, her own blood was inside the front of the leotard. But someone else's DNA was there, too. A man. A mystery man, because...
We've entered it into our CODIS system, and there was no hit.
CODIS, it's a database of
correct.
DNA.
The crime lab assured us that it was a pretty good sample of the unknown male right. DNA, and they said it's just a matter of time, and sooner or later we think we'll get a match on it.
They checked, of course, the DNA of Eric Kassab, who found the costume, and Harlan Byrd, and both men were cleared.
When we got that information from the DNA, it was almost like our investigation kind of shifted gears. We were in the recovered DNA mode. We were trying to collect DNA from anybody and everybody we could.
So did you go back to the people at the party?
We did. People we talked to on the first day of investigation, we now were going back asking for their DNA, because before we didn't know there was going to be DNA. We didn't even know it was a homicide at that point. So we're going back, making a list of people's DNA we want to get.
For example, Big Mike.
Big Mike. That's the DNA that we wanted.
And?
He wouldn't give it to us.
What was it with Big Mike? Was he cooperating? Or what?
They asked for my DNA, and I talked to my attorney, and he said, you don't have to if you don't want to. And I just felt like I didn't want my DNA in some database. You know, I'm not a criminal. I'm not a felon. And I also felt like they were almost pointing the finger at me again. I was over it, and I was kind of trying to move on with my life.
And so Mike Williams stayed on the persons of interest list. About a month later, the medical examiner's office told the detectives they now knew what killed Chelsea.
They ruled the cause of death as blunt force trauma to the face. We had initially noticed that there was a break in the jaw, and they just kind of confirmed that there were severe facial injuries, which they believed was the cause of death.
Several facial bones were fractured, especially around her eyes. The detectives decided to keep all that secret. And Chelsea's parents held a private funeral for their sweet youngest child, the baby of the family.
Hearts are breaking in this small town today for the Bruck family.
And then, in early September, about 10 months after Chelsea disappeared, the man who'd found her remains called the sheriff's office.
He's doing some more excavating on his property there, moving dirt around, working on the property, and he notices a red shoe. Mm-hmm. And we have several detectives that go out to the scene, and it happens to be the left shoe. It's the same size, same brand, same style as the one that had been found on War Road. Obviously, it's Chelsea's other shoe.
Yeah.
The detectives began to look around a little bit more, move some things around in the area, and they happened to find the green tights of Chelsea's. So at that point, we have everything accounted for. We have Chelsea's shoes, her tights, her costume, her wig, and her body.
Everything that is, but her killer.
Peace and love, that's my motto.
A peace-loving suspect confesses, but not to murder.
I just like smoking weed and having sex.
Mike Williams did not throw a backyard Halloween bash in 2015. It didn't seem right, 1 year after whatever happened to Chelsea.
I wasn't going to do it. I felt like I was just going to be done with it. And then I kind of had some people kind of contact me.
Oh, no, you got to have one, Mike.
Yeah, you got to keep doing it. You got to do something. You got to do something. And I'm like, you know what? I'll do it.
Mike took his party to a club in Detroit. The investigation, however, was stalled. And so it was out of desperation, really, that in June 2016, they gave the media photos of this guy, captured from video shot at the party.
What was that all about?
So we had received a tip very early on in the investigation about a white male with a mustache that had showed up around 3 o'clock in the morning at a residence on War Road. This is about a quarter mile or so, not even from where Chelsea's shoe was found. This guy shows up at 3 in the morning, pounding on this guy's door, says he's coming from the party, he's looking for a place to stay. You know, the gentleman says, you know, you can't stay here, you have to get going.
The partygoer took a snooze on the man's front porch, but then he left, and the homeowner found the guy's vest the next morning and called the tip line.
The vest had a pocket knife and some rope inside of it. So this guy shows back up, wants his vest back, he gets his vest, and he leaves.
Weird. Back at the time, it didn't seem like much of a lead, but who knew? So they combed through the party video.
We actually could see several frames where this guy is actually dancing around wearing a black leather vest. So we're thinking maybe this is the same guy that was at the house on War Road knocking on the door.
But when those pictures went out on local media...
Did you find him?
He actually came forward.
What do you have to say?
He came in and... You know, another key factor in the identification was mm-hmm.
he resembled a sketch. He was a
the original sketch.
Yes. Yep. So
that's a boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, I mean, things were adding up.
Yeah.
He's in the area where shoes found late, you know, knife in his pocket, rope.
The young man said he was very drunk at the party and didn't remember much. They took his DNA and scheduled a polygraph. But on the very day that was supposed to happen, the sheriff's evidence tech received an email.
She says, hey, you guys, I have something here you're going to want to see. And we were pretty much focused on what we were doing at that time.
Yeah.
And we kind of said, hey, just hold off, you know, wait a minute, let us finish doing what we're doing. And she put her foot down and she said, you're going to want to see this right now. So we stopped and she handed me the lab sheet, and it was a confirmation of DNA.
It was a match to the unknown male DNA on Chelsea's costume. But it was not the guy in the party video. It wasn't any of the men they'd been looking at. They could clear them all, including Big Mike. No, this was someone else, someone new.
Daniel Clay.
Had you ever heard of Daniel Clay before?
Never. Never heard
of him. He'd never come up at all?
Not in this case.
Who was Daniel Clay?
Daniel Clay, he's a guy who lives in Monroe County and doesn't really have a permanent address. He just kind of flops around from house to house, girlfriend to girlfriend. He has a few kids, but he just kind of does his own thing.
Somebody who's not doing very well in life.
No. Unemployed.
Oh, boy.
And we had found out that he had actually been arrested a month or two prior, I believe it was in May of 2016, by the Monroe City Police for a larceny from person where he stole a backpack with some tattoo equipment off of somebody.
A petty crime, essentially.
But it's a felony.
And unfortunately for Daniel Clay, the law in Michigan had recently changed. Under the old law, only DNA from convicted felons was entered into the national database, CODIS. The new law included the DNA of anyone arrested for a felony.
So upon his arrest with the new law in Michigan, they took a DNA sample from him and sent it to the crime laboratory to get entered in the CODIS.
So where was this guy?
Well, that was one of our big things, was locating him.
Yeah.
He was homeless and was bouncing around from home, trailer to trailer.
And imagine this. There were two warrants out for him for unpaid child support. So when they found out where he was, they set up surveillance and made a plan to arrest him on those outstanding warrants without telling him he was a murder suspect. That is, if they could catch him.
On at least one occasion, we see a male subject come out of the front door, onto the front porch, and smoke a cigarette. And we confirmed that was Daniel Clay. Mm. The deputies go up, they knock on the door. I mean, they're pounding on this mobile home for quite a while.
Oh, boy, okay.
So it doesn't look like he's going to come out. They keep knocking. Suddenly, the back door flies open, and out comes Daniel Clay. He takes off. Fortunately, we had several officers at the back door who were able to take him into custody immediately. They take him to jail, book him in, just like he's being arrested just for his child support.
Now, can you let me call my girlfriend and tell her I'm going to jail for child support?
Okay.
So when they put him in an interview room, Daniel Clay did not know he was a murder suspect. And questions about the Halloween party may have come as a surprise.
So what time did you go to the party?
About 8, 9. I was out of there about 10, 11.
Did he say he knew Chelsea?
He denied ever knowing Chelsea. Didn't see Chelsea. Never heard of her. Didn't know her. Until later on, he watched stuff on the news and that about this girl that went missing.
Yeah.
But denied ever knowing her.
Still, said Mr. Clay, he did know a lot of women. He was a lover of women, he told the detectives, a real ladies' man. He already had 2 children with 2 women, another on the way. A nice, simple life, said Daniel Clay.
I live like it should be the 70s. Like, free love, peace and love, that's my motto. Like, I don't like fighting, really. I don't like violence. I just like smoking weed and having sex.
Well, really, sex and pot? Oh, he probably liked those things a lot, didn't he? But peace? Nonviolence? Time to figure out Mr. Clay. And this was when Detective Predmore went to work.
You told me you never had sex with
Never had sex, never nothing with her.
Would there be any reason that your DNA would be with Chelsea Brown?
No.
Or on her clothes, or not in her hair?
Not to my knowledge.
A good interrogation is like peeling an onion to get to the truth at the core. Daniel Clay's story starts to change.
When I ask you about Chelsea Brooke and having sex, there's a possibility.
There's a possibility.
July 2016, 21 months and 1,037 tips after the untimely death of Chelsea Bruck, Detective Mike Predmore confronted Daniel Clay, the ladies' man, whose DNA was on her Halloween costume.
You never had sex with Chelsea at that party?
No, before the party. Before the party, after the party, nothing.
You were never, I didn't even know, but...
Like a patient fisherman, the detective flicked lures around his suspect.
You're a lucky man. I wish girls would just come out. Well, I think I'm a pretty confident kind of guy.
You have a wife?
I do have a wife. That's probably the problem, right? Okay.
So it went until, calmly and quietly, the detective broke the bad news. For all of Daniel's denials, DNA doesn't lie, and his DNA was on Chelsea's costume. And so the question, how could that be?
I did not do anything to that girl. Did not. Telling you.
He was adamant. They kept talking. And then Daniel admitted he did have sex with a woman at the party. Could it have been Chelsea? Well, maybe.
When I ask you about Chelsea Brooke and having sex, there's a possibility.
There's a possibility.
So that means...
I had sex with someone and I just don't... Okay. Like, I was out in the car and I fucked somebody and then not long later I talked to my baby mama, got in the car and left.
Okay.
So, time to reel in the fish.
This is the thing. Just hear me out, okay? I've been nice. I think I've been pretty a gentleman to you.
Yeah.
Really. And you have to meet, mm-hmm. All right? There are some things you haven't told me, all right? But we're getting there.
Okay.
I do not think you're a murderer. I'm being upfront.
Okay.
I'm being honest with you. I've been honest with you 100%.
Okay.
All right? I think something happened. You did not have any intent to hurt her.
I didn't do anything to her. She was fine and breathing when I left her. She got out of the car and walked away.
Daniel figured Detective Predmore must have assumed they found semen DNA. So he told that consensual sex story. So then Detective Predmore revealed a little more. That DNA, he told Daniel, wasn't semen. It was skin cells, recovered where Chelsea's costume had been violently ripped at the straps and the crotch.
I have your DNA where her stuff was torn. Nobody else's.
Okay.
Either something happened where it was intentional, unintentional, accidental. Okay, so listen to me. Now is the time for you to tell us what happened, because are you that monster murderer?
No.
Did you have intention, but it just slipped? It got out of control?
No, I didn't do that to her.
Or was it an accident?
I had sex with a girl, that's it.
It was like, for a split second, time stopped for Daniel Clay. Mm. Because now he's thinking in his head about all them lies that he just told me prior to, that he don't know her, never had contact with her, nothing. No contact with Chelsea, nothing. Now I'm telling him that DNA was recovered on her costume, his DNA. So Daniel Clay now has to rewind and see how he's going to cover up with lies, the lies that he's already told me.
And then Detective Predmore told Daniel a lie.
And I'm going to tell you one thing that nobody knows about Chelsea Brooke except us and her mother is that she had brittle bone disease. Brittle bone disease is a simple touch, a tap, where breaks.
I break my
okay?
Because of it.
So that's what happened.
It was an accident.
I had to do something to relax Daniel Clay and open him up to talk to me and tell me what happened. So this is where the brittle bone disease came in. And at that time, I think in the interview, it's where the turning point, Daniel Clay kind of leaned back and was like, oh yeah, yeah, that brittle bone, I've heard of that. I had my hand broke one time real, and he goes on.
The detective could almost see the wheels turning in Daniel's head. If her bones broke easily, could he say her death wasn't his fault? Daniel, not so calm anymore, asked for a cigarette and told a new story, that he saw Chelsea walking down the road after the party and offered her a ride. And then, he said, they had sex in his car again. And this time, things got freaky.
She told me to choke her. I choked her. Then we switched because she got underneath me. And, like, I don't know, we were for a minute. And then she kind of stopped and she went limp. So I stopped and I'm like, you know, and I started tapping her face. And okay. I guess I choked her too hard or something. Okay. I wasn't even choking her that hard, I didn't think.
Okay.
I've got girlfriends that like to be choked and stuff. I know how to do it. Like, I didn't realize her bones were brittle or whatever.
So he says, I attempted CPR. I kind of hit on her chest a little bit. And after that, he just freaks out. He says that he drug her, put her in the back of the car and was freaking out, didn't know what to do, didn't think of going to the hospital or anything like that. And he found himself driving.
Driving, he said, until he stopped by these railroad tracks and carried her body to this wooded property and tried to hide her with leaves and branches. He claimed he simply had no idea how her costume ended up in that abandoned building 5.5 miles away.
I don't believe we ever got the full true story of what Daniel Clay did to Chelsea.
Something made him snap. We don't know. Did Chelsea simply ask for a ride home and realize that he was going the wrong direction and then confront him on that? Try to get out of the vehicle? Did she turn down his advances for sex? We don't know. Something set him off, though, and just made him snap.
They arrested him then for murder. But before the news went public, Becky heard about it. And this was an added shock. The friend who told her about Daniel's arrest, a woman named Jessica, also worked at Olga's kitchen and has a son with, of all people, Daniel Clay. Daniel had called Jessica before he was taken to his cell.
Jessica, it's Dan. I'm going to jail for a while, a long while.
And she's crying, hysterical. She took a breath and she said her son's dad had killed Chelsea. And she's like, I'm so sorry, I'm sorry. And then I started crying because I felt bad for her. It was crazy that it was literally one person away, like in our circle.
But Daniel Clay had only confessed to an accidental killing, not murder. So he pleaded not guilty. After all, no eyewitnesses, no hard proof he meant to kill Chelsea. The ladies' man was going to trial. The prosecution says it was murder.
He obviously used a massive force against her and ultimately killed her.
Daniel Clay takes the stand to say it wasn't.
Did you murder Chelsea Brock?
No.
Daniel Clay went on trial for murder in May 2017, and as Chelsea's family and friends gathered here at the Monroe County Courthouse, the prosecutors prepared to deal with a tricky problem. Daniel Clay had confessed to an accidental killing. Leah Hubbard and Michael Rohrig needed to prove it was really murder.
Of course, there's only one person alive who knows what really happened that night, and that's Daniel Clay, and he's certainly no friend to the truth.
Although, lead prosecutor Rohrig admitted, some of Daniel's story was plausible.
I think that the fact that she was alone at the party without a phone, without a ride home, it was cold, and she was dressed only in that costume, I think does play a role here, because I think it makes it somewhat more likely that she might have accepted a ride from the defendant, whom she would probably have been acquainted.
But what happened after that, the state argued, Chelsea did not agree to.
It seems fairly likely that Daniel Clay demanded of Chelsea that something that she didn't want to provide to him. And he obviously used massive force against her to get what he wanted and ultimately killed her in the process.
Daniel Clay's claim that Chelsea asked him to choke her and after 20 or 30 seconds, she expired?
Structures were
on the stand, here's what the medical examiner said about that.
So that there was nothing left for me to evaluate whether or not Chelsea had been asphyxiated.
Nothing to evaluate because of the severe decomposition of her body. But could choking have killed her so quickly?
It is not a 10 or a 20 or even a 30-second process.
No, said the medical examiner, and certainly not by accident.
And with constant pressure placed on the neck, a person will lose consciousness within 20 to 30 seconds. After that point, the constant pressure has to be maintained on the neck of an unconscious person for an additional 2 to 2.5 minutes before that victim is dead.
If the jury couldn't believe Daniel's choking story, what would they think about this?
In this case, Chelsea's costume spoke for her. In fact, it really shouted for her.
The poison ivy costume. Daniel had told detectives she removed it by herself, willingly. Not possible, said Leah Hubbard.
In reality, it would have taken quite a bit more force than Chelsea would have been able to exert to remove the garment.
Prosecutors called a state crime lab fabric expert.
My opinion is that the leotard was torn or cut and torn with a blunt object.
And Prosecutor Hubbard argued Chelsea would never have ripped her costume for any reason.
Chelsea spent months making this costume. She was so proud of it. We never believed that she would tear that.
And look inside the leotard, said prosecutors to the jury.
And the jury had an opportunity to see the blood stains on the costume, and they were significant. The costume was turned inside out and shown to the jury, and it was very clear that she sustained a trauma that caused a significant amount of blood loss.
She was therefore obviously wearing the costume when she was beaten and bloodied. The defendant, by his own account, indicated that Chelsea was naked during what he claims was a consensual sexual encounter. But clearly what happened was she was beaten and bloodied first, and then that costume was forcibly removed from her.
And all those strands of evidence, said the prosecutor, from Daniel Clay's lies to the DNA, the broken facial bones, the blood inside the torn costume, added up to first-degree murder. But Daniel's defense attorney, Russell Smith, countered, His client killed Chelsea, yes, but this was no murder.
It was a tragedy that this young lady is no longer with. What? The fact that these two people got together and that one of these people passed away is not proof of murder.
He argued it was just a horrible accident caused by choking during consensual sex. And he put on his own forensic pathologist to argue that as well.
Some type of neck compression, strangulation.
Though the expert conceded there was no physical proof of that. But he disagreed with the state's conclusion that Chelsea was beaten to death.
The facial bones by themselves would be an unusual cause of death. There's a variety of things that could have occurred after death that potentially could have resulted in these fractures.
Then the defense attorney called his only other witness, Daniel Clay himself, the one person who knew what really happened that night. And Daniel swore his story about accidental choking was God's truth. And when she died, he said, he panicked.
I was extremely emotional. I never dealt with anything like that before. I've never been in serious trouble in my life.
As for the broken bones in Chelsea's face, he wasn't sure how that happened, he said, but he had some possible explanations. Maybe he accidentally hit her head with the car door. Or maybe he dropped her on the way to the woods.
So how many times did you drop her, if you recall?
Probably 5 or 6.
Or maybe he said one of those logs damaged her face.
Remember tipping a bigger one on her and a couple of smaller ones? I just grabbed the one end of the log, proceeded to tip it up over on top of her.
It was all an accident, said Daniel, and he felt just terrible.
Every day I think about this and I regret what happened. It's something I have to live with, something that her family has to live with. I never wanted to put someone through something like this.
Did you intend to cause her death?
No, I did not.
Did you murder Chelsea Brooke?
No.
Why do you say that? Why do you say no?
Because I didn't mean for her to die. Didn't mean for this to end like this. And it's just not my intent. It was to have a good time.
The prosecutor did his best to break Daniel's story. Said, of course Daniel didn't seek help, because people would have seen immediately that Chelsea had been brutally beaten to death.
And they would have seen her smashed in face, wouldn't they?
No.
And they would have seen her torn and bloodied costume, wouldn't they?
No, there was...
They wouldn't?
I mean, they probably, if they would have looked, yes.
If they would have looked, they would have seen.
But Daniel said he was drunk and high that night and thought maybe it was all a bad dream. But then he said he saw on Facebook that Chelsea was missing.
And that must have confirmed it in your mind that, yes, in fact, you did kill her.
It started making things seem like
and,
they happened.
And that's when you contacted the police?
No.
In fact, you never reported Ms. Brooke missing or murdered, did you?
No, I did not.
You never reported where her body was?
I didn't remember where her body was.
Well, you never reported killing her, did you?
No, I did not.
All right.
Daniel Clay did not raise his voice. He even came off as kind of sincere.
I've never hit a woman. I've never done anything like this in my life. It's not something I chose to do.
But this was no accident, Prosecutor Rory insisted. And he implored the jury, just look at the evidence.
The defendant murdered Chelsea Brooke. And then he discarded her lifeless, naked body in those woods, in an attempt to hide the evidence of his wrongdoing and escape any measure of justice for what he had just done.
Not enough, argued defense attorney Smith. Oh, they should find Daniel guilty, he said, but of manslaughter, not murder. For Daniel Clay had no reason to kill Chelsea and no motive to do so.
He caused her death. It's not a secret. Is it a murder? What was his intent? Was his intent to kill her? Did he premeditate the intent to kill her? That's the reasonable doubt, folks.
What was a jury to do? The verdict.
You just heard gasps in the courtroom.
And regrets.
I know I didn't do anything wrong, but it's something I'm not going to forget.
Chelsea Brooke's family and friends waited at the courthouse for the jury. A strange, nervous limbo.
I feel like the prosecutors had a lot of evidence, a lot of people to back up the picture they made of what happened that night.
But
I'm past the point in my career where I feel confident about cases until the jury returns with their verdict.
That afternoon of deliberation crawled by.
It was about 4 or 4:15 at this point. The judge indicated to us in chambers at that point that he was going to break for the day.
Some of Chelsea's family and the media were just about to leave the courthouse.
And when the judge came back on the bench, he let us know at that time the jury had reached a verdict.
That was shocking. I thought for sure it was going to take at least a day or two.
The jury entered the courtroom, anxiety in the air.
My heart was racing.
We, the jury, find as follows. Count one, first-degree murder, not guilty.
Wait, not guilty? Oh, they weren't finished. There was a second first-degree murder charge for killing Chelsea while sexually assaulting her.
Felony murder, guilty. Count two, concealing the death of an individual, guilty.
I was like, I knew it.
You just heard gasps in the courtroom, people crying. It was just unreal.
What's that feel like to get that result?
That's the closure you're looking for. You know, you put so much time, effort. This was a part of our life for several years, and it comes down to that. And to get the conviction like that, it feels satisfying, and you feel very, very happy for the family.
2 months later, everyone gathered again for sentencing, many wearing purple, Chelsea's favorite color. Her mom, Leanda, spoke directly to Daniel, and what she said surprised many here.
Today, with the strength from Jesus Christ, I forgive Daniel Clay, because if I don't, all that has happened the last 2 3/4 years will destroy the rest of my life. But forgiving is not forgetting. Because forgetting would mean that Chelsea didn't matter, that Chelsea was not important, that Chelsea didn't exist. Mr. Clay, I am leaving you with a Bible. Jesus came to heal our mess of a life, and I hope you will let him in, heal your mess.
Was Daniel's response sincere? Only he knows, of course. This ladies' man no more.
I thank you for that Bible, and I will keep that as long as I'm able to. And there's nothing more I can say except I am sorry for what I have put you through. And I will live with this for every day for the remainder of my life.
I know her mother forgives Daniel.
Which is pretty remarkable she would do that in court.
It is.
Could you do such a thing?
One day I'll forgive him. I'm not ready yet.
And then the judge turned to Daniel. Did not mince words.
What's very clear to me, Mr. Clay, you're a liar, a rapist, and a killer. It is the sentence of this court that you be sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Credit 300.
And a postscript. Chelsea was not Daniel's only victim. Shortly before his arrest, Daniel sexually assaulted another young woman. In June 2017, he was tried and convicted in that case, too.
We have no doubt that if he wasn't in custody right now, if we wouldn't be able to identify that he's the one that did this to Chelsea, that there would be other victims, whether it be sexual assaults, more murders. We're just glad that he's off the streets and can't do the same way else.
And Big Mike still throws his annual Halloween party at a music venue in Detroit. But he's not sure if his life will ever be back to normal.
Even still to this day, even though the guy's caught and convicted, they still, I hear little things here and there, and I'm just like, really? Really? You know, oh, he's the guy that threw the party. Don't hang out with him. Like, what? You know, like, I had absolutely nothing to do with that. You know what I mean?
Becky and Penny no longer attend Big Mike's parties. Difficult memories haunt them still. If only, they imagine. If only.
I know I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't mean for anything wrong to happen, but my actions could have prevented something wrong from happening, and that goes through my head a lot. It's something I'm not going to forget.
How often do you think about Chelsea?
Every day. I think about her every day. I have a wedding coming up, and she'd probably be in it.
What would you say to her if you could talk to her right now?
I talk to her all the time. That I miss her, and I'll tell her I was sorry. Sorry that I let her down, and that I loved her. But I think she knew that, because I told her every day when she was here.